You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Come on your feet. It's time to do a little bit of workout. Come on. Yeah. I said get on your feet. Come on. Get on your feet. Stand up. Yeah, all right. Now let's start with the legs. Actually, don't just watch me, okay? So kick with the legs. Kick, kick, kick. Now the other leg, kick. Kick, kick, good, good. Kick with both legs. No, don't do it, just watch me. Kick, kick, yeah. Okay, now the arms. Bring it up, yeah, feel it. Feel it. The knees, get the knees up high. This is the way Nikki does it. She told me this is how the workout always goes. Like this. And, getting a little tiring. All right, why don't you guys sit? Why don't you guys just have a seat? And you can just watch me as I keep doing it, kicking and feeling the exercise. All right, you guys feeling it? You feel the burn in your arms right now? You feeling that? Uh-huh. I am. You feel it in your legs? Let's go with the legs again. Feeling the legs. Are you feeling that? It's good, right? Good feeling in the legs? Uh-huh, uh-huh. Now shoulders. Uh-huh. Feeling the shoulders? Yeah, you got that going on in the shoulders? All right. All right, good. Excellent job. Excellent workout, guys. Give yourselves a round of applause. Now, if you're feeling kind of worn out, I understand that's what happens when you watch people work out. Be sure to hydrate when you're sitting to watch someone work out. It's important you stay hydrated. And I encourage you, depending on how out of shape you may or may not be. Anyway, yeah, so if you're feeling like that wasn't enough burn, I would encourage you to watch something a little bit more intense. If you watch, like, maybe, I don't know, The Rock, he does a lot of workout stuff, I'm sure. P90, 37X, Triple Lutz, Hike, that one, that's a good thing. You can watch, Way Down Workshop. You can watch Way Up Workshop. You can watch Way Up and Down, whatever you want. Just, if you're not feeling it, watch the next, kind of the next step up. So whatever that is, you can find a lot of stuff on YouTube. You can find the MC3 cheerleaders on YouTube. They have a workout thing going on. I am not one of them. I'm just a regular average workout guy. But it's important that if you want to develop endurance, if you want to develop your cardio, that you watch good workout videos. Make sure of that. And another thing that's really important, too, is buying the right weights. Make sure you buy a set that you can expand. I mean, this one right here, what is that? 750 pounds. So, I don't know, like 1,500 pounds. But you might want to start smaller than that. But it's important to buy the right kind of weights so that you can expand. If they're more expensive, that'll probably help you. Get them and make sure you have a nice spot in your house where you can put them, so that they look good there. Okay. So if you wanna get in shape, watch good workout videos. And if you're not feeling it by watching it, get a harder video. Get weights that look good in your house, and if they're more expensive, they're even better for you because those are two surefire ways to work out. If that doesn't help, watch sports. Watch sports on TV. And again, you could start with something easy like, baseball. And just watch people play baseball. Who am I to talk, right? Watch softball. You can watch football. That's rather intense. Wrestling, actually, is a very full-body workout. So watch wrestling. And we're not talking WWE, but watching wrestling. So make sure you watch good workout videos. And increase the intensity of the video if you're not quite feeling it in your legs and your arms. Then the second thing is make sure you buy good weights And again, the more expensive, the better. And having them in a spot in your home that looks good is very important. And then the third thing is watch sports. If none of those things work, make sure you're watching sports. And those are three surefire ways to make sure that absolutely nothing changes in your physical makeup, in your workout. Because you can't just watch someone else. You can't just know how to do the really fancy leg things. You actually have to do them in order for it to make a difference in your life, to make a difference in your body. And there are many people in this room that probably can tell you that. You know, there's definitely a weightlifting crew. There's like professionals in the room too. And they will tell you that it takes work and doing the hard things and doing the exercise to actually make a physical change, a physical improvement in your body, in your cardio, in your strength and all of that, those kind of things. But just watching them isn't enough. And I think you all know that. We realize that. We get that. The question is, why is it that as followers of Jesus, we think that knowing enough about Jesus makes us more like Jesus instead of actually doing what Jesus did? And so we get caught up in this idea of sitting back and be like, yeah, I know all the Bible verses. I have the Bible books memorized. Maybe you don't. Maybe you just say, hey, I show up and I watch someone else on Sunday mornings and I'm here every week watching someone do that. I even listen online. Even if I already heard it on Sunday, I listen again. And then I find other people that actually are good communicators and listen to them online. And all of that. Like, but if all we're coming down to with following Jesus is knowing more about Jesus, then we have missed what it means to be a Christ follower. So I want to look at this idea. We are getting close. We're wrapping up next week the Not On My Watch series. And we're talking about this idea of saying, you know, I'm not going to sit back and let someone else do it. I need to take this off. We're not going to sit back and let someone else do it. We're going to step up and say, not on my watch. I'm going to step in and make a difference. I'm going to step in and do what God has called me to do. And we're going through our core values in this series, our core values of the church, the things that guide us to do why we do what we do. Again, they're the guardrails, and they're kind of the outside edges of saying, okay, we want to make sure that in what we're doing, it fits within these values that we have as a church. And we're going to talk about our discipleship process in a little bit. That we've looked at the last few weeks. But the point that I want you to walk away with this week, or maybe run away or jog away or however you need to go away, is this. And that is, on my watch, I will live like Jesus. On my watch, I will live like Jesus. Not just know, not just read, not just understand, not just show up, but actually live like Jesus. And the core value that this comes from is this one. It's going to be added. I'm going to actually request after this afternoon to be added to dictionary.com to make it a real word. But the word is disciplicity. And this core value, and you can find all of these at mc2church.org. Click on core values. But this one is disciplicity. And this is what it is. Disciplicity means a biblical disciple is one who follows in the footsteps of their teacher. Therefore, we value living like Jesus, not just knowing about Him. And I'm all for knowledge. I've spent many, many years in school paying lots of money to people so that I could say I've got knowledge about the Bible. There's nothing wrong with knowledge, but if that is the end, we have missed it. Can you back me down a little bit? I'm kind of hot in the monitor. I probably from the workout, but I'm feeding back a little bit. Thank you. We value living like Jesus, not just knowing about Him. And I want to talk about this idea of a disciple. I don't want to trip and kill myself. If you grew up in church, you might have heard the word disciple. It's kind of an important word for Jesus followers. And at MC3, we use the phrase Christ follower. You don't hear us talk about Christians because Christian is so vague. Some people might say, well, I live in America, therefore I'm Christian. They might say, well, I show up in church, well, I'm a Christian. And that word, it's kind of been watered down. And so the idea of being a Christ follower means you have made a decision to follow Jesus. And follower is the same word for disciple. It means one that follows in the pattern of their master. And this kind of, if you haven't heard this concept before, this is why Jesus, you know, went along at the beginning of his ministry in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and he started calling to these people. And he said, follow me. And they left their nets. They left what they were doing and followed Jesus. Why did they do that? Because he was a rabbi. He was a well-respected teacher, which is what rabbi means. He was a well-respected teacher. And as people in that era, the smart people, the people that had it going on, were disciples of a good rabbi. And so these guys had been fishermen. They kind of like, well, sorry, you didn't make the cut. So you're out here fishing. You're kind of tax collecting. And Jesus says, follow me. And these guys leave everything and start following Jesus. They become Jesus' disciples. And what they do is, as a disciple, as a follower, they spend their lives, and literally every moment of their lives, with their rabbi, living life with that person and doing what they do. And it's kind of like a work-study program. I mean, a pretty intense on-the-job training where it's like, you're going to live like me. And then as they would get older, the way a rabbi system, this is before Jesus, this is the way the system worked, they would then become a respected rabbi, and they would call their own disciples to follow them. And one of the things that they would do to show that they're a follower is they'd be baptized in the name of that rabbi. They would be identified in the water by saying, yes, I am now following that teacher. And so what happens here at the end of Jesus' life, well, at the end of his time on earth, I should say, he lives right now. But he said to his followers, look, I want you now to go and make more disciples, make more people that are following me. And so nowhere did Jesus say, hey guys, let's sit down and let's gather together once a week. And I'll just talk. You nod your head, keep an eye on your sundial, and make sure that you're out of here on time to go home and watch the chariot races. Then we'll check that off your list, and maybe throughout the week we'll get together and we'll talk about the stuff that we talked about. And say, well, what do you think I meant by this? And let's talk about it some more. And, ooh, that's challenging. Ooh, that's encouraging. And then walk away saying, like, yes, those are things that I'm going to say that I'm going to do. And Jesus says, good. Good job. You now know. You're not doing anything, so that's good. No, a disciple did what Jesus did. A disciple did what the rabbi did. And as followers of Jesus, as Christ followers, our job is to live like Jesus. Not just sitting back and expecting the workout video to do what it needs to do. No, we get involved and we do what Jesus has called us to do. And so we're gonna look at this a little bit more. The lights are on. We're gonna look at John chapter 13. So if you have your Bibles, you can go to John 13. It'll be on the screen. If you have paper Bible, you can have a YouVersion. If you have the YouVersion app, you can tap on John. Oh, back up. Whoa, hang on. Okay. You can tap on John. Tap on chapter 3, and you can read this in the YouVersion. But this is what's going on. John records this. He says, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Now, I'm going to skip a little bit here. In your prime groups this week, you're going to read the whole passage, but there's this kind of incident where Peter's like, whoa, no, Jesus, what are you doing? Don't do this. And Jesus says, no, I have to do this, Peter. This is part of my demonstration to you of my love for you and purifying you and all this stuff. And then Peter's like, whoa, then don't just wash my feet, wash all of me. And we had a great video in ATU, and I believe your ATU Pit Stop app this week, we'll pick up on that video that our ATU team put together a couple years ago. So anyway, that's what Peter does. Then it says he finished washing their feet. He put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you... What's the word there? Do them. You will be blessed if you do them. And I want to kind of talk about this question. Jesus says to them, do you understand what I have done for you? Do you understand? Do you realize what's going on here, guys? He gets up, he washes their feet, and then goes back and sits back down and says, do you guys understand what just happened? Because this is key. This is key to what it means to being a disciple of Jesus for them and for us today as followers of him. Do you get what's going on here? And so I want to talk about what's going on here. And so there are four things or three things or there's a number of things, I don't know. When this idea of following the leader, Jesus said, I've set you an example. He says, I want you to do what I do because he is a rabbi and they're his disciples. And we are disciples of Jesus. If you get baptized at MC3, and we were going to have one this morning, but we didn't quite have enough people to make it happen. But if you have followed Jesus, decide to make that decision, you can be baptized to publicly say, I am following Jesus. And when you get baptized at MC3, you do not get baptized in the name of Mifflin County Community Church. You don't get baptized in the name of Sean Fitchley, Pastor. No, you get baptized in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, because you are his disciple. And so he says, if we are his disciples, if we are his followers, we need to do what he does. So what does he do? Jesus' example. He had a couple of things that happened in this passage. Jesus' example, first of all, was humility. And we spent a whole series back in last spring called Less of Me, looking at this idea of humility and looking at John the Baptist and how his life, everything about his life was marked by humility. But humility says, it's not about me. Humility says, it's not about my position, my authority, my power, none of that. And I want you to understand, please, like, humility is hard for us because we are arrogant American people living in the 21st century when the world is saying, tweet how awesome you are. Post your perfect Instagrams so that everyone sees the one meal that was perfect, that might have been a Photoshop picture from the internet, but not the, oh yeah, look at that one, that's burnt. Post. We're in a world that says it's about us, and Jesus is saying no. And I want you to understand something. Of any person on this planet that ever walked the face of the earth, Jesus had every right to boast about himself. Because he was God. He is God. And so in John chapter 13 and verse 3, it says, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. Time out. We know that Jesus, and we're going to celebrate this in a couple months, the birth of Jesus, the incarnation, God becoming flesh on this earth. So that's already happened here. Jesus is 30-something-something. And he knew that everything had been under his power because Jesus had been miracling. People had been healed. People had been able to see. People had been risen from the dead. So he got all that. And then it says that he had come from God and was returning to God. So Jesus even knew, I'm not done yet. I'm dying and going to rise again and then go back to my Father. So, like, what does your resume look like? It probably doesn't look like Jesus. And so that sets up saying Jesus understood. It wasn't like he's like, am I God? How's this working? No, Jesus knew who he was. And I love this. So, I love that so. Because it doesn't say, well, or kind of, or accidentally. It says Jesus understood that he, of all people on this planet, had full authority. And knowing that, so he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. Now, what Jesus is doing here is taking the position of a servant. Wrapping a towel, that is what a servant did. A servant had a towel wrapped around their waist. You know, the equivalent might be, you know, so you're sitting at your table in your fancy restaurant, and suddenly one of the people from your group gets up from the table, takes off their fancy shirt and coat and tie, because that's what people wear to fancy dinners, and just puts on the white button down, grabs the apron, throws it over their neck, and then waits on the table. Because we understand that imagery. When we see someone with the white button down and the apron, that usually means, oh, they're my server. That's how it works. It's kind of a general thing. So when Jesus did this, his disciples understood, like, whoa, he's dressing like a servant. And he didn't do it accidentally. He didn't do it, like, oh, randomly. It says he knew who he was. And because of that, he dressed up, or dressed down, as it were, like a servant. He stepped into that role. And so he demonstrated ultimate humility, saying, I'm going to put myself beneath every other person in this room, when he had the authority to be above every person on the planet. So he wrapped the towel around his waist. And then a little bit later, we're going to be jumping back and forth from the actual scene to then Jesus talking to them. And he says to his disciples, after this happened, you understand what I've done for you? He says, you call me teacher and Lord. And the word teacher is rabbi. It means one who is the master, one who has the follower. And Lord means master. That's what that word means. And so he is the one who's in control. The word has this idea of someone that has a staff working under them. You know, you don't question your boss. If you do, you get fired or you quit. Like, that's just the way it works in most situations. He said, you know, I'm Lord and teacher. He says, and that's rightly so, because that is what I am. I am the ultimate rabbi. I am the perfect teacher. I am the master. I am the Lord. And so he recognizes it there. And then he says a little bit later, very truly I tell you, look, I am the master, and no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. And Jesus is saying, look, and this is kind of common sense stuff, like, you know, don't kill the messenger. We've heard that phrase. You hear that. And just despite the fact that, you know, people delivered bills to my mailbox, I still like Dave. He's still a good guy. He's was my mailman. Now I'm sad. But he was our mailman, and the bills weren't his fault. So it's not his issue, and that's what Jesus is saying. It's not the messenger is the issue. It's the one who sent the messenger. And when he talks about this idea of a servant being greater than his master, he says, look, the master is in charge. The servant isn't in charge. And he says, look, if I am your master, if I am your Lord, if I am the one who is sending the message, you need to recognize that if I am humbling myself, where is that going to put you? You need to humble yourself even more. And so Jesus says, you're to follow my example of humility. The second thing that we see with Jesus' example was activity. And this is really touching on what we're talking about this morning. Jesus didn't just sit back and say, all right, now that you know these things, good. Talk about them among your friends. Maybe read about them. No, he says, he does something. And so that's what we see then continuing on in that passage. He took off his outer clothing, wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began. He didn't say, hey guys, I'm your master, I'm your rabbi, I'm your leader, and I want you to do what I tell you to do. He didn't say that. He said, I want you to do what I show you. Like, he wasn't you know, not as I do, but as I say kind of a person. He wasn't sitting back and going, like, you need to do that, you need to do that. And, you know, I've been on mission trips with people like that. There's nothing more frustrating when you're sweating and working hard and have someone back going, oh, you missed a spot. If I missed a spot, why don't you fix the spot that I missed? Because that would be a good thing instead of just sitting there and pointing. And you know, that idea of saying, no, we do something. And Jesus did it. He began to do something, to wash their feet. But he poured water into a basin and began. He didn't just say, do it. He didn't say, do it. He showed them how to do it. And then a little bit later, we see, he says, I set an example that you should do as I have done for you. And then continuing on that passage, he says, now that if you know these things, and here's the cool thing. He says, now that you know these things, again, knowledge is a good thing. He says, you will be blessed if you do them. And the word blessed does not mean you will be rich and happy and wonderful. The word blessed, and we've talked about this before, is a Greek word. I'm lost on my notes here. It means, where is it? It's makarios. Yeah, Makarios. And it means blessed, blissful, and the word means when God is present and involved in your life. He says, if you do these things, you're going to be blessed because you will know that God is present and active in your life. And it's so frustrating when people are like, why is my life so miserable? Have you actually stepped out and trusted God in something? No. Well, probably you're not going to feel God present and active in your life. You spent time getting to know Him, reading, praying, studying, talking to Him. No. Well, then let's not talk about blessing as some weird, like, whooping, fairy godmother kind of moment. No, it says that if you do these things, then you will know that you are blessed, that God is present and active in your life. So he was marked, his example was humility, doing something, activity, and then finally, getting dirty. And if we think that as followers of Jesus, we can sit back and stay clean, we've missed what it means. If we're going to truly do what Jesus did, we're going to have to get dirty. We're going to have to get involved in people's lives that are messy and smelly. And when you spend time around something that is messy and smelly, you start to smell a little bit too. And we're going to have to get used to that. And I'm not saying that we're not. Like we are broken people. And I think at MC3 we're fairly used to that. But I'm just saying this is reality. This isn't like, wow, that's weird. This is normal that we need to get dirty when we get involved in people's lives. And it's easy to sit back and be like, well, I'll pray for you. And maybe, and if you do, that's for real. That's great. But if you're just saying that as a token thing. But sometimes we just need to get dirty. We need to get involved and step into the areas that are not easy. We need to step into the things that are not nice or pleasant. And that's what Jesus did. And so going on in the passage here, it says he got up, poured water into a basin, and began to what? Wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Feet smell. Come on, you know that. But think about feet that walk around on unpaved roads, wearing sandals, in the midst of various other forms of human waste and animal waste and everything else kind of waste. Like, for me, it's a pain in the butt. I have to put my trash can out at the corner once a week. And then I forget. Dude. Wow, really? That's really tough for you, Sean, isn't it? Compared to the culture, you know, back then where they didn't have trash companies or dumps, things like that in the way that we do today, because everything was everywhere. It was nasty. And so Jesus not only puts on the towel like a servant, but then actually gets his hands dirty, washing their nasty, stinky feet. And so Jesus does it. He gets dirty. He gets down there and does that kind of thing that's the role of a servant. And then he goes on to, later in this passage, he says, now that I, your Lord and teacher, your master, your rabbi, your example, the one you were following, now that I have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. He says, I've done it, and you need to do it too. It's not just sitting back and watching me do it, it's doing it. And you're going to have a chance to discuss this in prime group, so I don't want to spoil it too much, but he's not saying everywhere you go, you need to make sure you wash people's feet. You know, carry around a rag and a bucket. That is not the point. The point was the attitude of humility, the action of actually doing something, and the getting dirty in it. And so washing feet, let's just put that in quotes. I mean, there's nothing wrong with washing feet. I mean, that's great. I mean, if someone says, hey, my feet are dirty, wouldn't it be nice if someone washes them? Then by all means, step in. I wouldn't like just show up in Walmart and be like, hi, I want to serve you. Please take off your shoes. Like, that would be weird. But the idea of saying, I'm willing to step in. I'm willing to serve. And that is what our attitude needs to be as followers of Jesus, because he is the example. And who do we think that we are greater than him? We're not. And so what did he do? He did it. He got involved. He stepped in. And so on my watch, I will live like Jesus. We need to live like Jesus. Not just know it, not just read it, not just say it, not just listen to it, but do it. And then we will be Makarios. We will be blessed. We will know that God is active in our lives. And it doesn't mean everything's perfect and wonderful, but it means like, yes. And if you've had those moments, you're like, yeah, everything's miserable, but I love Jesus and Jesus loves me. And sometimes that is just a powerful, powerful moment to say, okay, in the midst of the hurt, in the midst of the sadness, Makarios, blessed is that moment of saying, you know, but God's here. God's not done with me. God's still involved. And so this is the idea of living like Jesus. And this word is discipleship. It means to get involved and being like the rabbi, being like the teacher. And at MC3, we've shared this over the series, but we've talked about this idea of saying, if we're going to make disciples, what does that look like from the church's perspective, from the official Mifflin County Community Church Incorporated, from the leadership as elders? If we're going to say, what does that look like? And I share this, we've gone through this a lot in this series, but you're having the chance to write it down this time because this is so important that we keep doing it, because I want you to get it and get it and get it and get it and then be able to tell other people about it. And this idea comes from Acts chapter 2, verses 42 to 47, where we said, let's look at the early church. Let's forget the last 2,000 years of how different people have done different things and say, let's go back to what the church did. And there was a description of what the church did in Acts chapter 2. And you have little cards around you. And if you have done this before, if you have physically written on one of these cards before, I will give you a buy. Physically. It's not that you've picked one up and looked at it, but if you have physically written on one of these cards before, you don't have to do it right now. But if you haven't, I want this to be part of like just this muscle memory of understanding this is who we are. This is why we do what we do, and more importantly, why we don't do what we don't do, which is what we talked about last week, about this idea of change. And so we looked at this passage and said, what things do we see here that the early church did? And the first thing we noticed was right here in verse 43. I don't know which verse it was. It's part of with it. There we go. Oh, you can't see that. Wow, I can see it. They devoted themselves to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer. And then below it says, all the believers were together and had everything in common. And we see this idea of them being together. And then going on to the next part of the verse there. Hit it one more time. It says that they broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts. And so as we look at it, it's like, what is this? There's a common theme here going on. And MC3, Mifflin County Community Church, is also our C3 process. So C3, and we saw that this first thing that we see here, and this will come up on the screen there. Click it once. Yeah. We call this C1, and that is community. So you can write community in that blank on your paper. Because the church was together. They had relationships in community together. If you need a pen, there are extras back there. Sorry. If you want to raise your hand, Aaron will do his best to get one stuck right between your eyes. He will throw it as hard as he can. So, baby. Okay, the baby's gone. If you need some pens. Sorry about that. I had told him ahead of time and then I forgot. So now that you actually have an instrument to write with, you can write community in that first blank. And the early church was together. They were in relationships. They were in each other's lives. If someone had a need, they would step up. They were meeting together regularly. They were doing life together, which is such a cliche phrase these days. But they were like, there was nobody like, oh, I'm on the outside. No, they were in. They were in community. They were in relationships together. And so as a church, we said, we need to come up with something that facilitates that, because this is a biblical thing. This is something we want. So what can we do as leaders to make it so that this can happen? Not just go, hey, good luck. Hope you figure out community. No, we have created what we call prime groups, because something to the first power, something to the prime is called prime. So we call them prime groups. And so that's what we do to help encourage community at MC3 with prime groups. And that is on purpose. So then as we go on into the passage, we were looking at some of the other things. Yeah, okay, there we go. And we saw that they devoted themselves. The second thing was that they were devoted to the apostles' teaching. So they were gathered together as a group where someone who was I'm not going to use that word. Someone that kind of knew something about the Bible stood up in front of them and was teaching them. They were the apostles at that time. And then going on to the second part of the verse, It says every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. And later it says they were praising God. The temple courts was this large gathering place. They individually met in homes, but as a whole group, they met together in the temple courts where people were teaching them and they were worshiping, they were praising God. And so we're like, what is that? And it's this idea of congregating together as a church. And so we have what we call C2, and that is community, or yes, C2 is congregation. Congregation. And for this idea of congregation, you're right here, you're in it. So we said, let's create a program that does that, where people can gather together and be taught and worship, and we call that our worship experience. Worship experience. And that's where you are right now. And so this idea, this is not church, just be clear. Kara already mentioned it. You know, the church is the people. The church is us. This isn't church. This is the church gathered together to worship. And so all of this is church, is us as followers of Jesus doing what Jesus called us to do. And so this is a cycle. And so, you know, we want people to be involved in community. We want people to be involved in congregation. And then as we look at the passage, it goes on and says that they were selling their possessions and goods. They gave to anyone as he had need. And then at the end, it said all of the people, next slide, all the people were enjoying the favor of all the people. And so you saw this idea of that, hey, that person has a need. I don't have the money. Well, I can sell something and help meet it. Or there's something that I can do. I can step in and help them. And it said the entire neighborhood, the area was glad, not just the church people, but everyone was like, I'm so glad that that church exists. I am so glad that they are there. And so we said, okay, this is important. And we saw this as what we call C3. And this was caring. That we saw that the church was known for caring. They were meeting each other's needs. And so as a church, we said, what can we do to help that? And we do this kind of thing that we call C3 opportunities. And this is not a program as much as it's an opportunity for us to say, let's keep our radar up. What are some needs that we can do? What are some ways, or some needs that we can meet? What are some ways that we can do things? Opportunities. And we actually talked about that a couple of weeks ago, about C3 opportunities and how this works in terms of us being a part of making a difference. And so, again, this is a cycle. And so the idea being, you know, we want everyone at MC3, as an elder, as a pastor of this church, as the elders, we want everyone to be involved in these three things. Why? Because if you come to our programs, we'll be able to pat ourselves on the back and say, yay, we're good. Absolutely not. If it wasn't worth doing, we're not going to do it. But we think these three things are important because they're who the church is supposed to be. These are the things that it means to live like Jesus, to be involved in these three things. And the cool thing about it being a process is that sometimes people show up here, which is typical America church, you know, 21st century. They might show up on Sunday mornings. We have a number of people that have never been in this building on a Sunday, but said, you know, I'm not into this yet. I'm kind of afraid of that. But I was at Walmart one day and somebody started washing my feet, threw me off. But maybe I'll come and I'll come to your house. That'll be cool. And we have a number of people. This is where they start. A number of you are in here now because you began here. Some people do start here. Some people start here. They're like, I don't know your church. I've never been there on a Sunday morning. I don't know why that weird eye is like that in prime groups. But I do know that I had a problem in my house. And a pipe burst, and my next-door neighbor who goes to your church showed up and brought some other people, and they helped me out. They heard I had a surgery, and a bunch of people from your church brought a meal to me. And so they jump in and say, well, I want to know more about your Jesus. I want to know more about your church. And so this is our discipleship process. This is the way we do what we do, and there's a lot of things that aren't on here, and that's on purpose because we want to focus on doing a few things and doing them well, and that's what we talked about last week. You can listen to that at mc3church.org, and the video is posted there that we watched last week. But the other cool thing, this is one of my favorite things about this process. This is Acts 2. This is what the early church did. This is what we're doing. And the cool thing is that there was this point in the Gospels where this guy came up to Jesus and said, look, Jesus, I'm going to catch you. Because in the Old Testament rules, the Jewish law had all these rules. They had the Ten Commandments plus another 700-some rules and laws. And he's like, I know, I'll get this Jesus guy. He said, Jesus, you're so smart. What's the greatest commandment? Jesus is God, so sorry, you're going to lose that fight. And Jesus said, the first commandment is to love the Lord your God. The first and greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love God with everything you've got. And he said, and the second is like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. And the cool thing is that if you put a line down the middle of this, this breaks in down into loving God and loving others. And this is what we do. This is our discipleship process. Is it perfect? Probably not. Are we perfect? No. But this is what we said. We are going to commit ourselves as a church. This is what we're doing. And if you're like, oh, I want to see 17 other things. Great. There's plenty of churches that do 17 or 70 other things. But this is us. And this is why we do it. We're on purpose. We're intentional about it. Because we don't want to just know about Jesus. We want to live like Jesus. And Jesus lived out these things in his ministry and his life. The early church, when Jesus said, okay, I'm handing you the keys, followers of Jesus, disciples, you guys are in charge. You take it and run with it. And this is what they ran with. And so we are 2,000-some years later trying to do the same thing. So that is how we do discipleship at MC3. So I want to come back to the point. On my watch, I will live like Jesus. So the question needs to be asked, or maybe it's already been asked. It's hanging out there in the middle of, like, right here. Okay. And that is, if we're supposed to live like Jesus, what did Jesus do? Let's go like 90s Christianity. WD. That doesn't even work well. WDJD. WDJD. Okay. So what did Jesus do? If we're supposed to live like, what did he do? And so honestly, I spent this last week, like, it was hard. Because we could list 378 things that Jesus did. And there's a few of them that we're probably never going to be able to do, like bring ourselves back from the dead. But I was looking to say, what are some common themes that we see in the Gospels? Because the Gospels are four different perspectives, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, on the life of Jesus. And so they are kind of writing from their own perspective. It's the same story four times. And that is the life of Jesus. And so what did Jesus do? And so I kind of came up with these things, and there's probably more, and you could develop your own list. You'll have a chance in your prime groups to really chew on these and discuss them, and then there's some other passages you're going to look at that we're not going to talk about here. So like the appendix, you got bonus features going on in prime groups. So you've got the special edition if you come to prime groups during the week. Not only will you get to talk about what we talk about here, but then look at some extra things on how that applies. But what did Jesus do? So I came up with a couple of things. The first thing I noticed was that he trusted in uncertainty. And I know, we know Jesus is the Son of God, but he was also fully human. Fully God, fully man. And so there was a human side of him going, oh, this is going to be hard. Oh, this is kind of tough. And you see, and here's the thing, right? Jesus is the Son of God. Jesus is God. And often, the Bible records him going away by himself to spend time with his Father. And that's kind of crazy if you think about it. Like he intentionally, he developed what's called a devotional life. He spent time getting to know his Father. He spent time in prayer and in worship. And he was God. We're supposed to live like Jesus lived. We're going to do what Jesus did, right? But he trusted in uncertainty. So he was doing that, but he also had this side of him going, like, the human side of him didn't quite get it. And I think this is really, really hits the nail on the head in Matthew chapter 26. Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane. It's within hours of him being crucified. And he's with his disciples. He's already told them he already had the Last Supper. Judas has betrayed him. And he's at the end of his, that moment, that segment of his life, because he'll be resurrected 3 days later. But he says to his disciples, he says, guys, my soul is crushed with grief to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. He is saying, this is hard. Guys, I am overwhelmed right now. Can you come with me? And just kind of be around me. He wanted some people around him because it was tough. And he went on a little further and bowed with his face to the ground, praying, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken away from me. Jesus was in anguish. He knew what was coming. And he, the Son of God, fully man, fully God, went to his Father and said, is there another way? Please. Because I don't want to do this from a physical standpoint, it is going to hurt. It does not seem like it's going to be comfortable. And one of the other Gospels records him sweating to the point where his sweat was becoming like drops of blood. And there's actually a physical condition that of extreme stress will cause that to happen. So he's like, God, no, please, Father. I don't want to do this. This is hard. But then he says, yet I want your will to be done, not mine. And so even Jesus, in his humanity and his divinity combined together, he says, I'm going to trust you, God. And if we want to live like Jesus lives, we're going to have to take steps of faith. And that doesn't mean saying that we have faith. Saying doesn't demonstrate faith. Doing demonstrates faith. We talked about that at the end of the Messenger series with the tightrope. And we talked about the people with the guy with the wheelbarrow walking across the tightrope. Do you think I can do it? Carry a person? They're like, yeah. Who wants to be that person? Not a person raised their hand. Because they didn't really have faith, because if they had faith, they would get in the wheelbarrow and go across the tightrope line. And so if we're going to do what Jesus did, we need to trust and act it out and live in that trust. That means you're going to do things that aren't going to make sense. That means you're going to step out in a place and the finances might not be there. That means you're going to have a conversation and they might say mean things to you. That means you're going to go over and try to fix a relationship with someone else that you probably could be better off just ignoring. And we say, no, God, I'm going to step out in faith. I'm going to trust you because I'm going to live like Jesus did. The second thing that I saw here as I kind of looked through was this idea of selflessness. And we already talked about that with this humility idea. But Jesus, everybody was more important to Jesus than Jesus. And I don't know if we were to make a percentage, what that looks like in your life. But for Sean Fitch, I'll probably be generous and say 20% of Sean's interactions are more important than Sean. Because 80% of Sean loves Sean. And I want it my way. I like doing things my way. And sometimes that's this is my thing. Other times it's just, I don't want to help you. I don't want to get involved in your mess. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to be around you. I don't want to help you with, you know, at home. It's easier to sit back and be like, hey, I hope dinner's good. I'm not going to help with it. But then when it comes to the table, be sure that 80% is going to be like, this tastes different. Did you do something this time? Because it doesn't taste as good as it did the last time. I do that way too much, and I get looks. If we're going to be selfless, we need to say, okay, everyone else is more important than us. And that was Jesus. Being fully God, had the right. But instead, he was marked by his selflessness in the midst of adversity. Jesus was completely selfless and others first. And we need to live like that when it comes to being offended. Our rights. Like, if we're really going to live like Jesus, maybe we need to get offended and just deal with the fact that really offended me. But I'm going to let that go because I care more about you coming to Jesus than I do about what's right, about what my rights are or my perspective. Maybe that means our comfort, certainly. Our stuff, well, this is mine and I earned it. Is that selfless? Is that a Jesus attitude? In Luke chapter 23, we see this happening here. This is the moment. Jesus is now literally being walked to the cross in this passage. Or walked to the hill. He's already carrying the cross. When they came to the place called the skull, Golgotha, they crucified him there along with the criminals. One on his right, the other on his left. They crucified him. They nailed him to a cross. They drove spikes through his hands and his feet so that he will remain affixed to a block of wood. That is probably not going to be high on the, low on that, it's not that big of a deal pain list. This is painful. This is excruciating. They are nailing him to a cross, by the way, for something that he never did. So let's talk about rights. What does he deserve? For something he never did. They're nailing him to a cross. He's up there hanging, going to bleed, going to die, going to be exhausted. And what are his words? Father, forgive them. Can we say that? Will we? Are we willing, if we get offended, if we get cut off in traffic, if we get hurt, if someone says something, if someone writes something on Facebook, like, are we willing to step back and say, you know what, I could get back at you, but I'm going to say, you know what, Father, forgive them. Why? Because their eternal destiny probably matters more than our stinking rights. Because those things matter. And that's what Jesus was like. He had every right to be like, you know what? Screw it all. You guys are all going to hell. Literally. So that's what he could have done. But instead he said, no. I'm going to die in your place. I'm going to give up my rights so that you have hope. I'm going to give up my rights so that you can join me in heaven by becoming a follower of mine. That's what Jesus did. That was selflessness. Saying on the cross, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. That was his attitude. If we were going to live like Jesus lived, not just sit back and watch him do that stuff. Oh, Jesus, that was really neat. No, we need to do that ourselves. We need to pick up the weights and do that. Have that attitude. The third thing that I saw here is that Jesus spoke out despite unpopularity. And again, if you look through the Gospels, and you're going to have a chance in your prime groups to really come up with some examples of this. Like, you see these themes over and over and over and over in Jesus' life. So this is kind of like a summary. But he spoke out despite unpopularity. He said things. And I want you to get this. I've heard this idea like, well, I'm just a witness by my attitude. I'm a testimony to Jesus by my actions. And you should be. But Jesus said things too, and we need to speak. We need to talk about him. We need to say, hey, do you see something different in me? Like, what is up with you? Why are you doing this? Why are you being so nice to me? The response needs to be, because Jesus has done stuff to me. The response needs to be, because can I tell you about Jesus? Do you want to come to church with me? Not that that's going to make you a follower of Jesus, but maybe that's a step. Maybe you come to my prime group. I mean, this idea of saying, we're saying something, not just sitting back and being like, well, I hope to figure it out. It's not going to happen. And, I mean, think about the opportunity that we miss. And I've shared this story with you before, but when I was in high school, it was a band camp, and I'll be quick with the story. We had a break, and we went to one of the guys' houses, and I was in band camp, okay? Back off. And we went to one of the guys' houses on the break, and we came back, because we had to be back for an evening field drill. And on the way back, we were in like four different cars, and the one guy was a passenger. My friend Brian was a passenger, and another guy named Nick was driving this car. And I don't know whether it was the sun or what happened, but we were at an intersection, and Nick, like, there was a red light. There was no question. It wasn't like it had just turned red. It was red, and he just went right through it. And went right through this red light, and the car coming across this way just completely smashed into the back, sent the car spinning up against the guardrail. The guardrail stopped it because there was actually a significant drop on the other side. They were fine. They got out of the car. You know, they were shaken up, but there was nothing physically wrong with them. You know, we all pulled over and talked with them. And eventually, after like an hour later, and I went to a public high school, and we were coming back. And Nick, of course, stayed, and his parents came, and that whole deal. But Brian, I ended up taking Brian back to band because we still had to get there for practice. We were already a half hour late or whatever. So everybody's already at the practice field. It's a, you know, 5-minute walk from the band room. And we're walking, just Brian and myself. And Brian, who's a wrestler, he's a state champion wrestler. And he looks like a wrestler. He's like 5'4" and 5'4". I mean, like, he was just muscles and built like he... Anyway. So Brian, we're walking. He breaks down in tears. Tough guy, Brian. And I'm looking at him, and I'm a follower of Jesus. You saw my video, Dom and Beth. There were these leaders that stepped into our youth group and said, we're going to talk about committing to following Jesus, not just being fun and having a good time. And so I'm at that spot in my life, and Brian stops, and I was like, dude, what's up? He's like, I don't know what would have happened to me if I had died. Jesus spoke out. Sean didn't. All was on the tee. I was ready to go. And I just said, nah. And I said to Brian, oh man, that stinks. That was it. Jesus spoke out. I didn't. We need to learn to speak up. We need to use our words. And sometimes I mean saying the hard thing to someone that needs to hear it. Sometimes I mean saying, look, what you're doing is wrong. The things that are going on in your life aren't good. And maybe that means speaking out against things that, no, we can't put up with this. We can't be comfortable with this. This is wrong. Sometimes it just means saying the things that people need to hear about Jesus. But Jesus spoke out in Matthew chapter 23. And he says the hard things that they needed to hear. These were the leaders, the religious leaders. And he speaks up and he says some tough things. He says, woe to you, you hypocrites. He says, you shut the door of the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. You yourselves don't even enter, nor will you let those who enter who are trying to. He says, woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You travel over land and sea to win a single convert. And when you have succeeded, you make them twice as much a child of hell as you are. Woe to you, blind guys! And Jesus goes on, laying the smack down. And these were the people that were good religious leaders. Because note that he didn't do that to the broken people, to the hurt people, to the down people. He did it to the people that needed to hear the hard stuff. So don't go walking around being like, woe to you, you're going to hell! You're probably not helping the situation, even though that is true. Without Jesus, we are. But sometimes we need to speak up. And Jesus was known. And if you read through the Gospels, he spoke up. When everybody else was saying, condemn, Jesus spoke up and said, no. When everyone else was saying, stay away, Jesus said, no, I'm coming to your house. Jesus was known for speaking up and saying the things, despite the fact that it made him unpopular. We need to speak. We need to have actions plus words. Don't cop out with the actions. We need to speak. And the final thing I noticed is that Jesus acted during apathy. When everyone else didn't care, when no one else was willing to do what needed to be done, and that's what we saw already in the washing the feet passage, but Jesus wasn't just a thinker. He didn't just know how. He lifted the weights and did the things that needed to be done. And some of us need to do the things. In Matthew chapter 8, there's a story about large crowds followed Jesus as he came down the mountainside. Suddenly a man with leprosy approached him and knelt before him. Lord, the man said, if you are willing, you can heal me and make me clean. Time out, understand. Leprosy is not something you want to mess around with. The Jewish laws actually said you were supposed to stay away from a person that's leprous. From the other side of the road, there's a certain boundary of where you're not even supposed to be near them. They had things called leper colonies where they would send all the lepers so no one needed to be near them. Everybody else was like, whoa, leper, get away. And they would actually have to yell out unclean so that a person that was not leprous didn't accidentally get too close to them. So Jesus is there with these crowds. Everybody's watching Jesus. Hey, there's a leper guy. They're probably all going over here. Stay away. He says, Lord, if you're willing, you can heal me. What did Jesus do? He reached out and touched him. I am willing, he said. Be healed. And instantly, the leprosy disappeared. Now, do we have the ability to heal people from leprosy? Probably not. I'm not going to close that door completely, but probably not. But the point here was that people were unwilling to do anything for this guy, and Jesus touched him. And sometimes that's what we need to do. We see those needs, and we need to just step out and touch. We need to get involved. We need to do something. Not sit back and say, I sure hope someone else does it. We need to say, no, not on my watch. I'm stepping in. I'm doing it. So what did Jesus do? He trusted in uncertainty. He had selflessness amidst adversity. He spoke out despite unpopularity. He acted during apathy. On my watch, I will live like Jesus. Let's not just sit back watching the videos and wondering, why isn't it changing me? Because you're not lifting the weights. Because you're not doing the exercise. And that's what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for your Son. And I thank you that these aren't just instructions coming from on high as a, like, we need to do this, figure it out. But that you became flesh and lived and walked and served among us as a physical example of how to live like Jesus. And I pray for each of us, wherever we find ourselves, that this would be us, that we wouldn't just be bystanders watching, but that we would step up and live like Jesus. If we're going to call ourselves Christ followers, God, help us to follow Christ and do what he did. Give us the strength that we need to make those changes. In Jesus' name, amen.